Welcome to the July 19th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your tech questions. We're in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls with Amos Aesop. Good day, Amos.
Hi, Kent. How are you doing?
Surviving the heat out there?
Oh, I almost melted between the vehicle and here, but I made it.
You made it to the safety.
I'm excited about tomorrow with a 20-degree difference. I think that's going to be spectacular.
Well, we'll see if that materializes.
Right.
From the lovely city of Pierre, Jeff Litterick joins us as well. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, all, and I'm glad it's a little bit cooler here today than it was yesterday.
Great.
We're only around 80 yet, so.
We have a special guest today. Craig Mount is here. He's only one of a few Google product experts there are, I believe. Craig, you can correct me. And we're happy to have him on the show today. He's live from the Black Hills Surgical Studio in downtown Rapid City. Hello, Craig.
Hey, what's going on, Ken? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk you're a marketing, business marketing person as well, as knowing all the Googles.
Correct.
So we're going to talk about some problems you've found with local business listings online.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to do that in the third segment, but we've got a whole lot of other things to get through to get to you, and that's kind of cool. But in the second segment today, we're going to talk to STPB's social media maven, Heather Benson, about online privacy, because we've been hearing about the Face app all week, and she's got a few things to say, and then of course we'll round out that conversation. But that's later in the show. We are a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we provide the answers on Facebook. We're simply facebook.com/techradio. You may post your questions and comments there. Don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372, and our phone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 800-852-0214. Twitter users, you can send me questions at KentSDPB. And, of course, the email address is inthemoment@sdpb.org. Big thing this week was one of the big things this week. It's been a big week for tech. Amazon had their Prime Day.
They did.
And what did you get, Amos? I know you got something.
Oh, I did. I got a Ring doorbell, which is something that I probably wouldn't have gotten unless it was significantly discounted. I have recently moved into a new house that I did not have the ability, like I did in my previous house, to put up security cameras outside. Mm-hmm. And so I've been wishing that I had something, and this came along and was easy to install, provides some basic functionality as far as, you know, for me, I might be out of town. I want to look back and see what the weather's doing. Maybe there's a box been dropped off. I'm always concerned about other Amazon packages being taken from the front step. And so it was enough to push me over the edge to pick up a doorbell.
I surfed around a little bit and mm-hmm. looked for a few in the categories that I'm normally looking for. Didn't really hit anything that struck me.
You know, one of my favorite things I saw a lot on Facebook and Instagram was the quote that says, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but you don't need anything from Amazon today." And I think that probably resonated with a lot of people because, boy, you get caught up in the idea and it's Amazon Prime Day and I'm saving myself some money. But then there was also others who have pointed out that in some cases, those deals aren't as good as they look. They might mark it down a little bit, but they might change the default price or the standard price to be a little higher than it usually is. A website that I came across that I wasn't aware of previously was camelcamelcamel.com. I didn't take the time to find out why it's called that or
okay.
what, but this is a place that you can go to and you can research previous pricing on items so that when it appears to be on sale, you can see, well, what was it yesterday or what was it 2 weeks ago, and see if it's a legitimate sale or if it's the old bait and switch where they just mark up the regular price instead of marking down the sale price. And so I found some interesting stuff on there. And it's, I don't know, can you think of any other businesses that have created their own holiday around their company that everybody gets involved with and we talk about on the radio? It's just amazing to me that Amazon has that sort of clout in society.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Christmas, right? They created Christmas in July. You know, it's funny. I always avoid Prime Day. I am so, I mean, if they show me something, I always think, oh, do I need a Justin Bieber thermos? Like, is that something that I need? Like, I find myself pausing. So, yeah, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm not looking for the deals. I'm like, I know I will buy a bunch of stuff I don't need if I peruse that site.
So a few savvy aficionados of like some photography gear noticed that there was a Canon, like a telephoto, like you would use for shooting birds, like a super telephoto lens. Sure. They're like, you know, it's like $13,000 worth of glass.
Yikes.
Was on sale for $89.
Now that's a good deal.
And they got a good deal. You know, it turns out after contacting the company, the company's, oh, that was a mistake, right. But your item's going to ship. And they went, what? And so that caused a little bit of excitement. And, you know, of course, the speculation online was, well, you know, Amazon can lose that money because think of all the advertising they're getting for free because they screwed up, they made mm-hmm. this mistake, but they're going to make that all back. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the pessimists mm-hmm. Of the internet came out after that was revealed. But I think they were pretty quick to fix a lot of that. And I don't know if a few programmers lost their jobs or not.
Yeah. Curious where that mistake came in.
If that was an algorithm that just was dropping prices or if it was actual human beings.
I'm impressed that they honored it. That's a significant.
Yeah. And so was were the people that bought the product. They, when they called and said, you know, this just isn't mm-hmm. right. And they said, is this going to ship? And they're like, yep, it's going to ship. So that was not the only mess up, but sure. But that was the one that caught my eye, being the guy that would really like to have a nice birding lens.
Sure,
but yeah, I think even for that kind of a deal, I would switch to Canon from Nikon. But I don't know, I don't know. The other weird here's the other thing that happened with Amazon is they were offering deals for people. They would give you a $10 credit for Prime Day if you agreed to let them track your online doings, what websites you went to, what you were looking at for content, through their Amazon Assistant browser plugin.
Wow.
I thought 10 bucks was a little low.
I can't think of a number that would be, without getting into absurd numbers, that would be worth that.
Yeah, there'd have to be a couple more zeros.
Right, absolutely.
Either that or I just wouldn't use that browser that had that assistant on there very much. But I thought, 10 bucks is lowball.
Well, you know, that was a thing back in the old internet days. Gosh, now I am not recalling the name of the software, but when you used to be able to get internet service for free, it was dial-up internet service, but they tracked where you were going and they showed you ads in part of the browser.
Oh, was that it kind of ringed the entire screen with ads?
Yeah, and of course now I can't remember the name of that service, but you know, people didn't care for that much then either. I wonder how many took advantage of Amazon's offer.
I can't. It would shock me to know that if it was more than a dozen. I don't know. I know, Craig, I know you wouldn't do it for 10 bucks. Jeff, I just can't think of any. I can't think of anybody that would do that.
Not even probably for 1,000. So.
Yeah, it would take a couple of zeros and then some severe thought after
that. And
is
it for a limited time or was it forever?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm going to have to do some more checking into that. But it was kind of a non-starter. For me, when I started reading it, and I thought, well, I'll just see. But I didn't think anybody would want to go for that.
See, my mind kind of goes, what do they use that for? You know, how is that useful to them? It's clearly worth something to them. They're willing to pay for it. How mm-hmm. do they turn around and how do they monetize that? That's kind of, I guess that's where my biggest question is.
Yeah, to make you offers of their products. And they were very clear about that. This is to help us serve ads to you in a more meaningful way.
Hmm.
And, you know.
So if I start seeing Justin Bieber thermos ads, that's pretty much why, right?
Well, now you've said it out loud.
That's this show's fault, yeah. hopefully your Echo device is not listening at home.
Net Zero was that service, and I'm surprised to see that it's actually it's still online at netzero.com.net, and it says that they've been serving free internet for over 20 years. I'm surprised anybody's still on, and it specifically says dial-up. I'm surprised anybody's still using that.
There are still a few people out there. believe it or not.
I think in rural, it's probably more common, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Boy, I was a little disappointed. FCC authorized, I think it was yesterday, $563 million for distribution to ISPs to help 220,000 homes and businesses in 24 states, you know, rural, the rural sort of a thing. South Dakota wasn't one of them. There were 24 states listed. Iowa was in there, Nebraska was in there, Minnesota was in there, Kansas, Missouri, you know, all the core states that you would think were there.
Sure.
But not
us. North Dakota was there too.
What? Wasn't one of the 24 that I read. Okay.
North? Yeah. Well, and this was to assist in getting additional internet service to rural communities.
Yep.
You know, South Dakota has long been a leader in that area. I mean, it's surprising the quality of the internet you can get in some of the very low populous towns in places where you would assume there's just not internet out here because, well, there's not much of anything out here, including people and probably a lot of cattle, but that's about it. But South Dakota has always been doing really well on that between the large ISP providers and the state and then a federal grant, gosh, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, did a really good job of getting fiber all over the state to make that possible.
Well, I'm going to stand corrected then because the article I read this morning, and I even counted the states to make sure they just didn't leave us off.
Sure.
You know? Jeff, I'm going to take your word for it. I'm going to stand corrected because of the history of those companies, and I would imagine they're all...
Well, I think he said North Dakota, right, Jeff?
Yeah, North Dakota. There may be something in the future for South Dakota, but not in this particular grant.
Yep. Well, we'll see. We'll get there. I know there's a big push statewide with getting the wireless.
The governor's projects are going pretty good from my understanding. So the state gave a whole bunch of grants out, they've all been announced. But, yeah, kind of rural underserved areas where especially around around some of the major towns where the local telco wasn't interested in offering good stuff, and there just wasn't the population density to get a Midco or somebody else to offer services unless it was wireless. So seen a lot of those kind of projects popping up, and they should be done by the end of this year or so. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Hey, another big thing that's caught everybody's attention, the Apollo 11 anniversary has had a number of documentaries out. SDPB even birthed one of those about some local folks that were big in the program and, you know, through ballooning and other things and other interviews. And that was a great show. There, you know, a few lines of computer code were involved, you know, in a couple hundred thousand technicians and two astronauts. But it was that was a fun retrospection of technology to back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, did it take a lot of technology back then? I suppose it was cutting edge at the point.
Yeah.
Well, the Apollo guidance computer in the command module, to give you kind of a hint of the technology they had only 2,048 word memory of RAM, which is basically 2K of RAM, 36K of read-only storage where the programs were stored, weighed 78 pounds. And I'm sure they were trying to get the weight down every time they could because everything that weighs costs a lot of fuel and stuff to get up into orbit. And that guided computer, without it, there was no way to land on the moon. There was no way to take off from the moon and connect back up to the Apollo 11 command module. Someone rebuilt that computer recently and then programmed it This is a kind of interesting thing to give you the amount of power it had. Programmed it to mine Bitcoin. They calculated that the computer would mine one Bitcoin in exactly the life of the universe.
Wow.
So one Bitcoin would take the entire life of the universe for that computer to calculate. It actually, each hash was taking something on the order of like in a minute to calculate. While a modern day computer, it's not super fast, but it's not the life of the entire universe. It's measured in, you know, minutes, so to hours. So kind of an interesting little thing to do, because yeah, it can mine Bitcoin. It's just based off the speed and feeds and stuff back then. It's just gonna take a few billion years.
Yeah, if you think about your cell phone or maybe even the watch on your wrist, the calculating power is giant compared to that. But it was reliable. It had to work.
Mm-hmm. Had to work and had to be small, and as less weight as possible, because there was big size limitations and stuff for that time frame. Most computers couldn't fit into the space it fit into. I mean, they were still mainly room size things, not very small things that could fit inside a space capsule.
Right. Right, exactly. Well, we're going to take a quick break, folks. We need to do that. And when we come back, we're going to get into, I think, a little bit of the FaceApp controversy with Heather Benson. But we're going to do that after this quick break. Welcome back to the second segment of In the Moment Tech Radio. We have Heather Benson. I spoke with her yesterday about FaceApp. It's gone viral again. It's been out almost 2 years, but it's had an update. And I spoke with our social media marketing folks. Her name is Heather Benson, to hear her concerns. So Heather, latest thing on the internet by my news feeds is the Face app.
The Face app.
So magically I can look and see what I'm going to look like 20 years from now. But that's not the only thing. It'll do new hairstyles and other things. But what are your concerns?
Well, it's not just my concerns. I mean, this has already become a election year favorite hot topic that the various parties are going to argue about, because it all comes back to your data, your privacy, and what are you going to do or not do about it. And this app, like many, many other things that you get on the internet, asks you a seemingly innocent question. May I access ... And it's the ... the fine print, the what are they really getting into, where is that information going, and ultimately who might be making use of this outside of aging you 20 years, that is the concern for the media, for politicians, and really should be the concern for the users on what your data is doing.
So I take it you're never going to use this app.
I, long ago when I first started thinking critically, and I'll admit I was one of those people when I was first using Facebook 12 years ago, would get the whole, do you want to allow this to access your Facebook profile, all your friends, et cetera, and so on? I would blindly say yes, just like the rest of us. And as time went by, I started really thinking about, well, I don't really want my email or my friends list or my profile information or my photos being accessed, because I want us all to think about this in the real world. So Kent, I want you to imagine you're one of my friends. I meet you on the streets of Vermilion.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, Kent, I've got a really cool new gadget. Do you want one? And you say, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I show you the shiny gadget, and you're like, oh, I really want that. And you reach for it. And as you're reaching for it, I say, but I want you to take your wallet out, give me phone numbers of all your friends, your email address, your date of birth. I'd like to have all the photos you've taken recently. Also, I'd like to see your search engine history and have access to that in the future as well. I want to know what pages you look at on Facebook. I want to know what you're reading about on a day-to-day basis. And if you give me all that info right here on the street, and by the way, I can do whatever I want with that information after I get it, then I'll give you the shiny gadget that you more than likely will forget that you own by the end of the day tomorrow. In a real-world scenario where another person is asking you for that information, I think it's pretty unlikely any of us would say yes. But when a corporation, in this case, a Russian corporation, asks you for all that very personal information, we do say yes. And that's really the problem that we need to get at. And we don't ask what's happening, and then we all act shocked when the Cambridge Analytica scandal breaks and we're upset and we're like, how could that happen? Well, it happens because we say yes. And really, the campaign needs to be just say no. We need to go back to the 80s and bring that campaign back.
So I've seen posts from the younger generation that say, well, my stuff's already out there anyway. NSA knows what I'm doing. They've got my DNA. They know how to get a hold of me. They've got my photos. Who cares? They should care.
They should care. And I think all of us can say, all right, if you're going to be accepting of that fact, if you're going to say, that's fine, my information's out there, I can't do anything about it, it's already being leveraged in ways that I don't know about, then the flip side of that is, then you need to examine your reactions to breaking news about Russian interference and leveraged Facebook advertising and all that, because you're an active participant in the sharing that information. None of the paper trail, the electronic paper trail of that particular scandal surrounding Facebook was anything that people hadn't agreed to. They didn't fully realize what they were agreeing to, but at some point they said, yes, you can have that information. And maybe they thought it was just for that survey or that quiz, but the fact of the matter is you had the opportunity to read and say, yes, you can have my name, my email, my search history, my Facebook, you know, what I'm doing on there, and you can have that Corporation X and do as you will with it. And so we have to balance, like, if we're going to act outraged, then we also need to take that opportunity to be responsible and do what we can when we can to protect our information. You don't get to pick and choose which things you care about because they're really one and the same subject. And the question you ask yourself is, do I want to be part of most? Am I okay with that? If you are, that's great. Go ahead, do as you wish. But if you're not, and it's something you want to protect yourself from, and you don't want to be surprised and shocked and outraged when some scandal breaks, then you have the responsibility and the opportunity to make a choice to not participate. It's a shiny gadget. Like I said, by the end of the day tomorrow, 2 years ago, this went viral and everyone downloaded it, and everyone has forgotten in 2 years that they downloaded it. And of course they've enhanced it, but it's a shiny, pretty toy. And the question is, how much do you want to give up for a shiny, pretty toy? We've used this term a lot on here from one of our wonderful ITMO guests. And the bottom line is, if you are not paying for a product, you are the product being bought and sold. If it's free, then you're the product. It's one major thing to always underline and think about.
And we're back live with Amos Aesop and with Craig Mount in Rapid City. Is it that scary?
Oh, sure. The thing that I, and sorry to cut you off there, but the only thing I was going to add is, you know, with the Cambridge Analytica stuff, Mark Zuckerberg being called before the, you know, I think one or two Senate committees. And they released this, you know, because you mentioned the things that you give, right? Like you said it best when you said that, you know, that if your information is the price that you pay for that shiny gadget, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a drop in the puddle to what they actually collect about you, because when Facebook actually gave this 225-page document to the Senate Intelligence Committee, I believe it was. And the things that they actually admitted to tracking on a user, it was really surprising to me, almost to the point of like being not useful. Like they track things like battery levels on your phone, like how you use your mouse, just the most trivial things. And it's interesting to me because, again, I think, well, how is that useful? But again, it's just, we talk about the information that we give, the information that they collect, it's vastly, you know, vastly more.
Hmm.
You know, being in the security realm, I'm kind of excited that this has been brought forward, that this is the sort of thing that this has been going on for a long time. As was mentioned, this app has been out for several years. It's not as though it just came out last week. But other items that are similar to this that I see on Facebook all the time are those surveys where or those apps where someone, you know, it says what kind of in nicer terms, what kind of jerk are you? And let us review all of the information on your Facebook statuses, and we'll give you a percentage of jerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what is the most used word you've ever posted on Facebook? Just give us access to everything you have on Facebook, and we'll do that. And people don't really realize those sorts of things. Are you an angel or a devil? And you know, all we need to do is read your news feed, and so people are handing out that information and clicking yes or I agree or really not even paying attention. They just are hitting the button to get to the end result, and that's going to catch up with a lot of folks, especially if at some point this nefarious software is the one that catches you.
And the surveys, you know, or the IQ tests.
Yes.
You know, 50 questions or whatever. Are you going to really, if I came up to you and said, hey, would you take this IQ test so I can look at it and have the results? There's no way.
Yeah. People are very generous with their information, not really understanding that the ramifications that could come from that. And, you know, a lot of times there are benign examples where this information is just aggregated and anonymized and we're just looking at it for trends to provide better services, et cetera. But you never know when that bad application or piece of software is going to come along. So you need to really review these. And honestly, when the Face app thing got started a week ago or whatever, I really kind of questioned it because, like was said, if you're not paying for it, then the price is actually you and your information. Do I really want, and it's just a picture of me, right? I mean, is it really that big a deal? I don't know. What are they going to do with it? How are they going to use it? Sometimes it's difficult to quantify what the bad things could be that come from that particular issue. But it's over the course of time and more information and more pictures and more everything.
And eventually, if that company is sold, the data goes to another company. It's always going to be there. That information is always going to be there. And that's the big rub on my part. And if it's not anonymized, I can understand anonymous usage information. I've come to terms with that. but the rest of this is really, really concerning, and it's something we'll just and it's not just FaceApp, like you say, it's, you know, look at Facebook itself.
Right.
If you want to do that.
A question that I had for you guys, because, and you guys, you know, you're the security experts here, something that I've always kind of wondered. Right. And it actually kind of harkens back to those Senate hearings that I was talking about earlier. I believe it was Senator Dianne Feinstein. I actually wrote about this a little bit, who said, you know, you guys need to regulate yourselves or we're going to regulate you for you. Some version of that. What do you guys think about like regulation? Like, do you think that's something that like the government does need to step in? Is that useful? Should it be done at state level, federal level? Like, I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts.
What a slippery slope that could be. On the one hand, obviously we have a problem with users not being diligent in reading the end user license agreements, the privacy statements, the items that come with it. And sometimes there needs to be a mechanism to protect people from themselves. But at the same time, we see time and time again where the government also doesn't have a good, firm understanding of technology and therefore might be heavy-handed in regulating things, causing unintended consequences. And honestly, do I want, you know, the older folks who are not as exposed to technologies, you know, many of our congresspeople are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. Do they fully understand this when it comes time to vote on a regulation that will affect, you know, people who are more likely to use this software, their teens, 20s, and 30s, et cetera? It's definitely a catch-22, and I certainly can see the arguments both ways. I don't have a good hard stance on where that regulation should come in, because we certainly don't have the folks in who are making those regulations are not the ones who are most familiar with how this stuff works, they haven't been using it all their entire lives, et cetera. That'll probably get better through attrition, right? As younger people move in and the older generations move out, there'll be people with more experience. But right now, it's, I don't know, I see that as a catch-22.
It's not a popular thing these days to wish for regulation
on
anything.
Right.
It seems to be the trend to roll everything back. But I am old enough to remember what lakes and rivers and streams used to look like in the 70s and what the sky and the air used to be like. And what turned that around was the Environmental Protection Agency. And sure. I wonder, you know, as much as I believe in the Electronic Frontier Foundation and freedom on the internet, you know, there needs to be some consumer protections. Or I don't think that folks can self-police. There's a record of that, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's well established we can't well police ourselves. It's a matter of having those that write the regulations and enforce the regulations a firm understanding of what they're doing, as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction that just doesn't sound right.
Yeah. Well, does that answer your question, Greg?
So a big old I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I had. But that's kind of the conclusion that I came to. It's more of a ask for forgiveness type model from these big tech companies, as opposed to, you know, asking for permission prior, right? And I think that it's interesting how that kind of, again, affects, you know, everybody, and, you know, how we kind of find ourselves in these situations, like with these massive, you know, data leaks and things like that.
And equally as interesting is, in the last week or so, maybe it's the last few weeks, you've seen some revelation on the big tech end of things saying, well, okay, we're just not going to be able to say, we're just the publishing platform. Whatever people put on it is what they put on it.
Yeah.
They're starting to realize that, you know, they are responsible. They are providing the tools for the spread of whatever, good, bad, or otherwise. And so, you know, so the thought process is maturing, and it's going to be interesting to see. Now that they do that, I don't know. Is it a million people now have pledged to storm Area 51 on Facebook?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, a million people have pledged, but the seven people who show up are going to be in for a surprise. Yeah. So where is everybody?
I've heard that the hotels around Area 51 are booked, and that today actually there's a meeting. The Air Force had a meeting about the alleged storming. So it's going to be. I'm watching. I have a bowl of popcorn. I'm gonna see this through.
Not a good idea, yeah. But
I hope somebody brings drones just so that there's large scale video of anything that does happen
of the small scale event.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about false listings on the internet and other things and things that businesses can do to make themselves stand out versus the frauds. After this, we're back to this once in July edition of In the Moment Tech Radio, and I should, without, because I know this next segment is going to go long, and I got to get this in there. But it's next Friday that Sysadmin Day.
Oh, sure.
And it's 20th anniversary. Huh. And you're going to say 20th anniversary. I don't realize it, but we have been talking about it for almost 20 years.
We have. We're going to put that on my calendar.
On the air, yeah. So for folks that that have not heard this show before in July, this is a day that has been set aside to show your appreciation for, well, sysadmins. And if you don't know what that is, it's a label, I guess, that's fairly broad. Category, and it used to stand for folks that, you know, administered your phone system, or, you know, made your computers work in your building, or they ran the web servers, mm-hmm. or what else could they possibly be? Sysadmins, just,
well, you know, sys is for system, so really if the item qualifies as a system, whether it's your websites or your databases or your email or your laptops, you know, people who generally we can refer to them as their IT group, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. You know, sysadmin is a pretty broad term, and we've really we've really narrowed that down in the 20 years that we've been having the day. But really, if you know an IT person, this is the day to buy them a donut and a Mountain Dew.
A cake, Doritos, any appreciation, any show of appreciation,
right,
would be it would be more than they've had in probably their entire careers.
That's right.
So, yeah. All right. So next week, get out there on Friday and bring donuts to the office, whatever, you know, and send a picture of them, put it on Instagram or put it to our Facebook page or whatever. It is a classic time to look at those tech horror photos, you know, and a lot of sysadmins trot those out this time of year to show you the conditions that they work in.
You know, I was a sysadmin for a long time here, and there is some really funny, amazing, jaw-dropping things that happen by users who just are new to technology or to other things. So there are some horror stories.
Yeah, lots of them, and they're fun to read. Well, I don't know if this classifies as a horror story, Craig. I guess it kind of could. we kind of brought you on the show today to talk about something that's happening in Rapid City specifically, but I think it's happening all over. You're the owner of a marketing firm in Rapid City called Classy Brain.
Correct.
And you've noticed when it comes to, so a lot of folks use apps to find businesses. So I don't know a plumber. I'm gonna use an app to find one. Or in the case that we're gonna talk about, a storm rolls in, blows a branch over, hits my roof of my house. I need a roofer, and I go online. And you found what? Just tell me what you found.
Yeah, sure. So just to provide some context, I think that just to preface all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's over. Google has easily won the contest between most utilized search platform, right? Bing is nowhere near, you know, kind of where Google's at. Neither is Yelp, right? Google owns 90% of search share online. So if you need these services that you had talked about, then you're typically going to go to this platform, right? And I just want to, you know, everybody listening here, right, they probably have used Google Search, Google Maps sometime in the last 24 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe multiple times a day.
Yep.
And the thing that I want to point out, the Wall Street Journal actually reported on this on June 20th. And, you know, one of my colleagues, Mike Blumenthal's, was kind of talking about the problem of Google Maps spam. And, you know, several weeks later, I'd kind of been thinking, how does this affect me on a local market? How does this affect me in South Dakota, specifically Rapid City? And so my company, Classy Brain, you know, we kind of banded together and we just did some research. We picked a field, specifically roofing, just because, you know, hail damage right now seems to be, you know, pretty prevalent in this area. And so there's a lot of roofers who will come in from out of state, set up shop for a little while, right? They're called storm chasers in the industry. And we wanted to kind of track those, right? And see how that affected the local consumer. And so we looked at Google Maps specifically, right? Google Maps is a thing that if you perform a search on it, it'll pull up the review information of the business, the telephone information, website information, and a lot of people will, you know, just make a phone call based off of that information.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that 50% of those listings on Google in Rapid City were illegitimate. They should not be there. Spam. You call the company, either the company doesn't have a license with the state, they don't have a license with the city, right? They're not eligible to do work on these roofs. That was really surprising to me that it's that bad. I mean, this affects everybody, right? Like if you're performing a search, like I said, and you know, it's kind of, it's almost like we live in this age of disinformation now, right? It's like we're past the information age. Now we're in the disinformation age, and people are kind of leveraging that on, you know, vulnerable platforms.
Hmm. So for the items or the businesses that are fraudulent, how long does it take for whatever reason that they're doing this? They apparently want to put their information out there. How long does it take for it to get on there? Do they have to submit it? Is there a vetting process?
Yeah.
There's no checks and balances here?
Yeah. So the requirements I guess like oversimplified, right? And as product experts, we deal with this, you know, very frequently, almost daily. You need to get to get on Google Maps, you need a Google My Business listing. And so you basically log into Google My Business, similar to how you'd log into Facebook. The only thing that you really need is an address, and Google will send you a verification code to that address. It usually takes about 5 days. After that, I mean, you can use your home address, right? After that, you're live on the map. it's that easy. You can put your phone number on there. And I think this really became an issue, and I don't want to get too technical here, but Google had this algorithm update called Possum. And Possum was an update that basically decided that the most important rank signal to Google on Google Maps is going to be user location, right? How close you are to the thing that you're searching for is going to be the most important thing. And so with that, we saw a lot of spammers trying to take advantage of that, right? If I'm looking for tacos, right, and there's a taco truck right outside, which that's probably what I'm gonna have for lunch, honestly. But like, if there's a taco truck like right outside of South Dakota Public Broadcasting in Rapid City, that's probably gonna show up first, right? So if you're a spammer, and in this case, a roofer, and you're trying to target maybe like a neighborhood in Rapid City, well, you just verify a, you know, pin at this, you know, an address in the neighborhood. And if anybody around there has been affected by hail, well, you're probably going to show up pretty close because of, you know, again, how Google has, you know, prioritized this signal, proximity, they call it.
Now, do they still, it's been a while since I've done this, but I've actually gone in, searched for a business, and it says, we found this business. Is this you? Claim this, you know, claim this business.
Claim this business, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're Google Maps used to import a lot of information from data aggregators, there was four big data aggregators that it used to pull from, Localese, Infogroup, Factual, and Axiom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you saw that, you know, do you own this business? It could mean, you know, one of a couple things. One, that, you know, Google pulled that information in from somewhere else and nobody had actually verified that information yet. Or it could mean the business owner just didn't want anything to do with the listing anymore, so they removed it from their Google My Business profile. But those types of listings are still prevalent. Sometimes some small business owners, especially in Rapid City, I've seen, they don't even realize they have a Google My Business listing.
Right. Yeah, that's why I mentioned that.
Right. And so it's, you know, from a security standpoint, right, and since that's kind of the flavor of this, you know, segment, is, you know, you definitely want to claim that for sure. You want to claim, you want to own your information. I always tell people that, you know, with your Google My Business, you're really just, you don't have direct control over it, but you have the most control over it. I mean, because with anything with Google and search engine optimization, which is what we do, we're really just influencing, right? We can't control, you know, the algorithm, but, you know, we definitely know the ways to, like I said, influence it. And some people influence it, you know, for, you know, personal gain, right? As was the case with the Rapid City Roofer research that we did.
Right. But the good news is, if this is unfamiliar to you, if what we're saying is not making any sense and you're a business owner and you haven't claimed your business yet online, you should probably do that. And the benefit is it goes beyond security, because you're going to get yourself probably more accurate information about your business listed for folks that are looking for it.
Right. You can, that's a great point. And I would add that, again, it's about authenticity. Nobody knows more about your business than you.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, monitoring. So, you know, let's say you get a review from somebody who wasn't even at your business, right? I was actually just dealing with a case in Colorado where there's a grocery store chain known as Sprouts, and there's a daycare known as Little Sprouts. And Little Sprouts kept getting all of these negative reviews about Sprouts' deli. This is the worst sandwich I've ever had in my entire life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Little Sprouts is like, we don't make sandwiches. We babysit kids, right? And so, you know, things like that happen, you know, and owning your Google My Business profile, owning your information, You know, you can flag these things. You can make sure that photos that people upload are appropriate for the brand that you want to represent. And yeah, you, like I said, you have more control kind of on your presence online, because honestly, that's the viewpoint that I would like every small business owner to understand, if they could understand anything from today's, you know, the lesson, right, that I'm trying to give,
mm-hmm.
is that people see your business now not through your website. They don't. Like, the homepage for your business online right now is the Google search for your business, because that's where a lot of people stop. They get all the information that they need there. I mean, there's been many studies that kind of back this up. If you think about your own personal user habits, right? Like, people just, they might not even visit your website at all. They might see the information on the Google My Business profile, make a decision just based off of that.
Right. Are they open right now?
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Or are they open in 50 minutes? Or, you know, here's the menu. It's just incredibly useful information that's just immediately accessible.
Right.
Is what I like about it.
It's designed to be that way. You know, what's the review snapshot? Okay, perfect. I made a decision based off of that. And so, you know, and again, there are some businesses that don't even control that. You know, they don't even own that. And maybe they don't even realize that, right? Because mm-hmm. honestly, we are kind of in a knowledge gap right now, right? The difference between what industry professionals like myself know and the average small business owner knows, I mean, that just gets bigger every day, right? With every meta shift in strategy, from like an algorithm update to like legislation that's passed, you know, for example, the GDPR stuff, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
right? That was a little while ago. And then terms of service updates, right? It's just, you know, these guys are busy being business owners. You know, they don't have time to manage this stuff a lot of times. You know, they have to be an expert at what they do. And then all of a sudden, nowadays, right, companies like Google, Facebook, Yelp, they've added an extra hat to the hats that they already wear, which is, hey, you got to be a marketing expert now. You got to know how, you know, you look online and how to get business online. It kind of got thrown into this mix, right? So I kind of sympathize with business owners in that respect.
I understand, and it sounds like you've got a lot of work ahead of you. And we certainly do on our show. Craig, thanks for joining us on the show today. I've appreciated your insights, and it's gonna have a lot of small business owners hopping out there and just checking and making sure everything's the way it should be. There's a lot of good reasons to do that, as we just heard. Also want to thank Amos Asip for joining us today, and Jeff Litterick. And folks, that's all the time we have for today's show. Hit the website at sdpb.org and click on listen. And of course, there's the app. Have a great weekend.